Good morning. Our first case this morning is United States against Larson. Counsel for the defense.
May it please the court, Chief Judge Upwan, honorable members of this court, I'm Captain Tim Cox, and along with Lieutenant Colonel Mark Strickland, I represent Major Larson, the appellant in this case. The case which asks whether or not Major Larson had a reasonable expectation of privacy in his government computer that was searched and seized by the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, and whether his counsel was ineffective. This court should answer both questions in the affirmative. Now first, Major Larson did have a reasonable expectation of privacy in his government computer. This case does involve a military officer who worked in a military office using a military computer. But those facts in and of themselves do not mean that he did not have a reasonable expectation of privacy. The critical inquiry is whether the facts and circumstances, including the operational realities of the workplace, either favor or disfavor a finding of such an expectation. Now, the military judge in this case did not seem to distinguish between the subjective and objective expectation of privacy, but Major Larson did have a subjective expectation of privacy. This computer was in his office, reserved for his exclusive use. It was password protected by a password known only to him. It was kept in an office that he was able to lock the doors in his absence. He was able to close the door to protect his privacy and security. He was able to engage in personal use in this computer. The only limitations thereon appear to be that so long as it did not occupy a significant portion of his day and did not interfere with his official duties. And this policy regarding personal use was commonplace throughout the office. And he was also never told that he could not lock his office in his absence, nor was he ever told that he could not close his door to protect his privacy. It is true that he had to consent to monitoring when he engaged in his use of his computer, but the consent to monitoring that he consented to appears to be very similar to what this court saw in United States versus Long.
Do we know what the banner on the computer said?
We don't know exactly what it said, only that it was for official use, not for legal activity. It's a U.S. government computer. Consent to monitoring is essentially all that the commander was able to testify to.
How do you deal with Mr. Sesser's testimony in Long?
Well, with that, we don't have actual testimony from the network administrator regarding what their monitoring practices were. That clearly was very critical to this court's analysis, and we don't have that here.
In describing what you referred to as the operational reality of the workplace.
Correct. Well, with the monitoring that occurred in, that would occur in this case, as explained by the commander, was that it was very similar to that of a telephone. So it suggests that the monitoring was real-time, not for the administrator to go into the actual hard drive of the computer and take whatever information it so deemed for purposes.
The banner also... Do you agree that that is a, if not the critical fact of distinction you have to deal with between Long and this case? Well, let me rephrase that, not in the form of an answer. What is the critical distinction from your standpoint between this case and Long, and how do you deal with those distinctions?
Well, certainly in this case, we didn't have testimony from the actual network administrator. And I can't dispute the fact that this court specifically said they found compelling that testimony. But in the absence of that testimony in this case, all we are left to assume is that it was real-time monitoring and not the type of intrusion that occurred in this case, especially given the fact that the intrusion was done by law enforcement and not by a network administrator.
But in Long, we were talking about emails, and here we're talking about Internet historical data.
Yes, Your Honor.
Aren't they different?
Not necessarily. When we look at Long, the expectation of privacy was within the contents of the emails. Obviously, when those are on the government server, obviously the network administrator or law enforcement, when they ask the network administrator to seize them, knows that there are emails in transit or are located on the server. So there is address information. So it was by virtue of opening it up. In this case, the government computer is essentially like an envelope, where the email would be like opening up and be like an envelope. In this case, the government computer would be like the envelope that was opened up to go into and seize the information that was there. The fact that it only perhaps traced only historical records of the Internet use, first of all, I would like to point out that it appears that Agent Meekins, who did the forensic analysis, pages 590 to 594 of the record, seems to indicate that he actually sees not just internet history, but also actual images, both graphic files and movie files. So it seems that there were actual content information that was seized from the computer. But also, really because that it is transactional records, doesn't diminish the expectation of privacy that Major Larson would have had in the government computer. Because in order to get to that information, they still had, law enforcement still intruded into an area where he had an expectation of privacy. Merely looking at the transactional records would be akin to looking at the nature of the contraband that was actually obtained when the ride was found.
How do you answer the government's contention that he didn't know this thing existed, so he could not have had a privacy interest in it?
Well, exactly the same answer, Your Honor, in the sense that the expectation of privacy is in the computer itself. The fact that he might not have...
In the machine, not in particular files? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, for purposes of this, because in this case, again, it doesn't matter if he doesn't know what's on the computer itself, because he has the expectation of privacy in the machine.
Well, it's the government's computer, so he owns the computer now?
Well, no, we're not saying that.
Is the privacy in the computer or in the data in the computer?
It would be both in this case, in the sense of what did he do and what did the unit allow him to do that would indicate that he had an expectation of privacy in the computer itself.
Well, let me ask you this question. If the information systems management people came and wanted to swap out the hard drive, take the hard drive that your client had and replace it with a different one, first of all, would the information, the historical data, have been on the old hard drive?
Yes, sir.
The one that they were taking away?
Yes, sir.
Would your client have been able to say, no, you can't take that hard drive, I have private information stored on historical data files?
If the administrators were doing that swap as part of their official duties, probably not. That would seem to be akin to the Monroe case in the sense that that person is doing their official duties.
But would your client be able to say, no, wait, I'm going to wipe the hard drive before you take it because I have private personal information stored on the hard drive?
His expectation of privacy, probably not, because the expectation of privacy that he has in that computer is limited as to the network administrators.
But if he has no right to control it, and if he can't stop it from being taken away and accessed, what expectation of privacy does he have?
It's vis-a-vis law enforcement. When law enforcement is the one that initiates and does the intrusion, when we look at the workplace searches and seizures of government employee cases, it does seem to suggest that the official doing the intrusion does impact the degree of reasonableness. So while the limitations on the expectation of privacy might be limited vis-a-vis a commander, a supervisor, or a network administrator, it does not mean that that's the same limitations as relates to law enforcement, which is what the Ortega case seems to suggest, and also what this court did in Long. Now again, the appellant was never told by his unit that his computer was subject to any inspection. There was never any inspections had during his time in the office.
Didn't the banner tell him that?
That again indicated consent to monitoring by the network administrator.
Well, we don't know what it said, do we?
Well, we don't. That's true, Your Honor.
Yeah. So we're in the dark.
But we certainly know it didn't say that.
Do we? What do we know?
We know that it says consent to monitoring for official use, U.S. government computer, not for illegal activity. But the commander, who was a comms squadron commander, didn't say that banner allowed law enforcement to do whatever it pleased.
Well, no, that would be a legal conclusion on his part. I'm not interested in his legal conclusion. I'm interested in what the banner said.
Sure.
And we don't know.
We don't know. You're
okay.
Right. But it is important to note that the commander himself testified that he never implemented any such inspections or routines in his own as the supervisor of the unit.
There's some testimony as to what the banner said. Are you saying that's not reliable in the absence of the actual banner?
Well, I am saying that's the best evidence that we have to go on and the inference that we can draw from it. But so we do have some evidence of what it says. We don't know if it was
said. The CO says, to the best of my knowledge, it's a DOD banner that states this is a U.S. government computer for official use, not for illegal activity, consent to monitoring. Some sort of statement like that is in there.
Yes, sir.
So you're not taking issue with that you accept that as for what it is?
Yes, sir.
That's okay.
You're not contending that even though appellant was permitted to make some personal use of the computer, that it was issued for personal use. Do you understand the distinction?
Let me try and see if I do. I'm not contending that because he was issued the government computer, he could use it for whatever purpose he wanted to do.
Well, I'm asking a slightly different question, which is under Rule 314D, the language that says, under normal circumstances, a person does not have a reasonable expectation of privacy in government property that is not issued for personal use. Is your contention that because he was permitted to make some personal use of the computer, that it was issued for personal use?
To a certain degree, yes, Your Honor. While what the rule says is what it says, the fact of the matter is the realities of the workplace would tend to show, as the rule also indicates, the facts and circumstances still need to be analyzed to determine whether or not there would be a reasonable expectation of privacy, despite perhaps the general rule. And in this case, there was, similar to in Long, pretty lax and lenient treatment regarding personal use of the government computer.
Counsel, what's your view of the Air Force instruction and its limitations with respect to storing, processing, displaying, sending, or otherwise transmitting offensive or obscene language or material?
Certainly a regulation that appellant and all military members or Air Force members specifically would be on notice of being aware of. We're not saying that what appellant did was okay or consistent with the rules and regulations. But the fact of the matter is that when law enforcement is the one doing the intrusion, what the regulation suggests to the members is that government as employer has a right to know this type of information. But when government as sovereign acting as law enforcement, then the inquiry still has to be on whether or not the person has a reasonable expectation of privacy. There are plenty of times, unfortunately, civilians and military members alike are doing things they're not supposed to do. But merely because they're doing things they're not supposed to do does not eliminate their expectation of privacy in areas in which they have a reasonable expectation of privacy.
But when we're dealing with a government-furnished property, which under the rule, normally there's no expectation of privacy, why isn't the regulation pertinent to considering to what degree the norm has been deviated from in creating an expectation of privacy? That is, if, as you suggest, he had some expectation of privacy based on the practice of allowing certain personal use of the computer, why isn't that expectation qualified by the regulation itself? The regulation says you're on notice. Here are things that you can't do with the computer. Why don't we read all these things together and say, number one, the computer is government furnished, so it's not his personal property. Number two, he is aware that there's some monitoring that's going to go on. Number three, he understands that it's allowed for some personal use. But number four, the personal use is qualified by the regulation.
And that would go to his expectation of privacy vis-a-vis his commander and supervision. But law enforcement, it should be, and it is, a different entity, even though it's all part of the government.
Did he testify in this case?
I'm sorry?
Did he testify on the motion?
No, he did not.
So how do we know that he had any expectation of privacy on this?
Just based on the conduct that he demonstrated by virtue of the testimony of his commander. And the facts that we know as him as a member of that unit had a password-protected computer, a password known only to him. He was able to lock his door in his absence. He was able to close the door.
We don't know whether if he got on the stand, he would have testified, A, that I had an expectation that everything I put on that computer was private, or B, I understood in light of the regulation the purpose of the computer and the limited personal use that I didn't have an expectation on this. Why shouldn't we hold that against him? He had the right to testify and not have that testimony used against him on the merits.
Well, understood. But in proving the validity of the search, it was the government's burden. What Major Larson had to do was assert that he had an expectation of privacy. And the testimony was presented by the government as the party with the burden, and the evidence that was presented, what we can infer based on that is that there was an expectation of privacy, that he did have a subjective expectation of privacy.
Is the AFI a punitive regulation?
Yes, it is.
Well, then doesn't that make it a general? Could he have been charged under 92 with disobeying it?
Well, he was.
Okay. Well, then he's charged with knowledge of a general lawful order. Doesn't that close the door?
No, not necessarily, because, again, it's who's doing the intrusion in the first place. Despite all the notice that he might have of what he can and can't do, what his command is then allowing him to do, and when law enforcement comes in independent of that and pursuant to a criminal investigation of which he's a subject of.
But it's a punitive reg, which is itself carries criminal consequences.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well.
But again, what we would have in that situation is where the command is initiated. The command is aware of the information, not law enforcement initiating and doing every part of the investigation.
But 11314D makes that distinction. I mean, as I read it, it says if it's government property, you normally don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy, period. It doesn't say except when it comes to law enforcement. And so I'm just a little bit perplexed as to the distinction you seem to be trying to make between who it is that's looking at the data under the rule.
Understood. And it's a lot of the circumstances of this particular case. It's where the equipment is located, and it's in a government office. This is a workplace search. The fact that it involves government-issued property, the rule still also says you still have to look at all the facts and circumstances. And it's important in this case that it occurred in the workplace, because when it does occur in the workplace, what the case law seems to suggest to us is that the degree of reasonableness of the expectation of privacy does turn on consideration of who's doing the intrusion, law enforcement or supervision.
I mean, actually, it says that even when the property is issued for personal use, then you look at the facts and circumstances. It doesn't say if it's not issued for personal use that you look at all the facts and circumstances.
But in this case, he was allowed to use it for personal use.
But is that different? And this goes back to the initial question I asked you. Is that different than it was issued for personal use?
It shouldn't be treated as different. No, it should be treated the same. Is that when personal use is involved as a result of what supervision allows, what the command allows, well, then the facts and circumstances have to indicate whether or not does that mean that there is now an expectation of privacy.
And why isn't one of the facts and circumstances, if we're going to go that way, the Air Force instruction that the Chief Judge and Judge Stuckey are asking you about?
That would be considered one of the facts and circumstances, which certainly this court can consider.
Why wouldn't it be a dispositive fact and circumstance?
It wouldn't be necessarily dispositive in a case like this, because even though there is a regulation out there, if it's not enforced in the sense of routine inspections of the monitoring that finds the improper use, well, if you have the unenforced regulation, then the regulation doesn't carry as much weight as it would, as if the commander did have some kind of routine inspection or monitoring which was able, that all the employees knew about, which would give it force and weight.
Can you cite any cases that say that a lawful, punitive, general regulation is unenforceable because it falls into desuetude? Is that what you're saying?
I'm sorry, if you're asking a question.
You're saying it wasn't enforced, therefore it can't be enforced.
Well,
or what are you saying?
In this case, I can get a cite regarding, but it's from the Ninth Circuit, but it's not obviously from this court or CCA. But what it says is that even if you have a regulation that allows for inspections and searches or things that you cannot do, but if you don't enforce it, then that holds little weight in the totality of the circumstances of the analysis to determine the reasonable expectation of privacy. Now, again, this was a private office. It was not a bunker or a tent in a combat zone or the barracks. It appears to have all the trappings of a conventional workspace. And again, it's the operational realities of the workspace.
Conventional military workspace. Or conventional workspace.
Conventional workspace. Obviously,
it makes no difference whether this is a civilian or a military person in a military office.
Well, it doesn't, because it seems to resemble something akin to what we might find in the civilian world. I'm not saying it's exactly alike, but it certainly is not the type of military workplace that only exists in the military. Certainly everyone probably uniform, and there are certain customs and courtesies that must be observed. But nevertheless, it is a private office where reports are written and employees are talked with and doing duties that further the mission, but nevertheless might not be associated with traditional military workplace that we might consider, such as in a deployed environment.
Counsel, can I ask you a question on a slightly different, related but different subject, which is what evidence retrieved from this computer was used at the trial, and how was it used?
The evidence that was retrieved was profiles on a Yahoo Internet message board that appellant had accessed, web links that he was able to access by going to these profiles, thumbnail pictures that he had either downloaded or accessed but were ultimately saved to a hard drive, as well as movie files. These images and information were used for two purposes. Number one, they went specifically to the images to charge to misuse of the government computer by having these images on his government computer. If this court does find, and we ask that it do, that there was a violation of his expectation of privacy, those images obviously were the government's only evidence regarding that charge, and that charge should be set aside. But also, the evidence was used to prove predisposition, which the government had to prove to disprove the defense's theory of entrapment.
So why did they have to use that to disprove the defense of entrapment when they had the undercover agent say he showed up? And when they had her log of, or his log, their log of the conversation?
Yes, and the government, as well as the Air Force Corps, do argue that, that the chat logs, which the agent possessed independently, was sufficient to show predisposition. We would submit that the erroneously admitted evidence casts that evidence of the chat logs in an entirely different light. Because what those chat logs do show is that there was inducement by the government agents, and that it did show that Major Larson did not go to two allegedly prearranged meetings, that Major Larson frequently told Agent Hunt that he did not want to go through with it. But that Agent Hunt actually didn't believe that it was not going to happen, but that he would re-engage with Major Larson and say, why aren't we meeting? Let's do this, and using emoticons and punctuation to try to appeal to Major Larson's emotions. Now, with the instruction by the military judge and trial counsel's extensive findings argument, about 18 pages of his argument, these 18 exhibits that were used to prove predisposition certainly bolster the government's theory of predisposition and certainly undermine the defense's theory of entrapment.
Well, it may have bolstered it, but let's cut to the chase. Why isn't this harmless error, if it's error?
Because the evidence of predisposition in the chat logs alone, there is reasonable doubt that, that whether that would have been sufficient to disprove the entrapment. That evidence is cast in an entirely different light when the government gets to argue, you get to consider all of these images and all these things that he had done on the computer to show his predisposition.
He showed up?
He did show up, but was it because of inducement or was it because he was predisposed to do so? The government obviously gets to argue, and the members were able to consider evidence that was erroneously admitted to be able to find predisposition as a result. But without it, all they were left with was perhaps truly just inducement, or did they have to try and find predisposition solely based on the chat logs, which was really one long transaction between the undercover agent and appellant.
Agent Meekins testifies that he chose to contact Colonel Prayback, the military magistrate at the time, to gain search authority, verbal search authority.
Yes, sir.
Does the record ever tie up that loose end?
It does not, Your Honor.
Does the record indicate why and if Meekins thought he needed that authority?
If I remember, actually, I believe it was Agent Edwards, actually.
Thank you. Testing your knowledge of the record.
I don't believe he ever said why he thought he needed that authority.
Was defense counsel free to ask him?
Certainly. And it's important to note that there was at least three trial counsel in this case. There were three defense counsel in this case, and yes, there were lots of motions filed.
So we don't know. He says, I chose to contact him, but we don't know if, in fact, he did, and if, in fact, he got search authorization.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Well, we also know the CO is present. Does the record reflect whether the CEO authorized the search?
He did not. In fact, during his testimony on the motion to suppress, he didn't recall there being any exchange of information between him and OSI. And in fact, his normal course of procedure would have been to contact the legal office for advice, and he didn't do that in this case. All he was told was to open the door so they could go in and seize the computer.
He was present.
He was present.
And he opened the door.
He was the one who was
in his office space.
Within his unit, yes.
Counsel, your time has expired. You have an opportunity on rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for the government.
May it please the court, I'm Captain Jamie Mendelson, and together with Colonel Gerald R. Bruce, I represent the United States, the appellee in this case. The two issues on appeal are first whether the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals erred in its holding that appellant had no reasonable expectation of privacy in the internet history files on the government computer, and the second issue is whether appellant was denied effective assistance of counsel. Appellant's claims fail on both issues, and this court should affirm the decision of the court below. I'll begin by addressing the search issue first. On this issue, appellant's claim fails because he did not possess a reasonable expectation of privacy in the internet history files of his government computer. The Fourth Amendment guarantees the right of people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects from unreasonable searches and seizures. And in order to establish a Fourth Amendment violation, appellant has the burden to show a legitimate expectation of privacy.
Why isn't this case a fortiori from Long? Here you got a locked door. Here you got a commander sitting in a private office with his own computer, albeit a reservist, a situation I know rather well. Why isn't this case a fortiori from Long?
This case is distinguishable from Long. And the bottom line is that what Long is ultimately about is the reasonable expectation of privacy and the contents of one's email communications. And society is prepared to accept as objectively reasonable an expectation of privacy in email communications because really email is the modern day digital equivalent to sending a...
That's the government's position? So if this involved email, appellant wins?
It's the government's position that as the case law sets out, a determination of whether there's a reasonable expectation of privacy depends on facts and circumstances of the case. And this court held in Long that under the facts and circumstances of that case, society was prepared to accept as objectively reasonable an expectation of privacy and the contents of email communications that were sent in an authorized manner on the government email system. Had the emails been sent in an unauthorized manner, it would be another question.
Well, so the expectation of privacy is not in the computer. It's in a particular kind of data that's on it, that are on it.
Yes, Your Honor, because that's what we're
talking about. Okay, and explain to me why there is a different expectation of privacy in emails from other data on the computer.
Yes, Your Honor.
Would this have any meaning to a person who wasn't a very, very, very familiar with computers?
It does, because it's really kind of intuitive in terms of
human. Well, I mean, you know, that goes to subjective expectation. You know, does an average person tapping on a computer care whether, does he think he has an expectation of privacy in the machine and what's on it, or only in particular things that's on it?
Well, the person typing on the computer, you know, may have a subjective expectation
okay.
of privacy.
But then let's go to the object. Okay.
But what we're focusing on here is what is society prepared to accept as objectively reasonable in that
okay,
expectation.
Okay, and what is society prepared to accept as objectively reasonable?
Well, in certain circumstances, the expectation of privacy in email communications, and that really ties back in to the heart of the Fourth Amendment and what the Supreme Court said in both Katz and Smith v. Maryland. Whereas in Katz, a person has a reasonable expectation of privacy in the contents of their telephone conversation if they take, you know, reasonable measures to keep that conversation private. And even so, if they're, you know, having this phone conversation over a, you know, a public payphone. But in Smith v. Maryland, the Supreme Court held that there's not a reasonable expectation of privacy in the actual phone number dialed from their home telephone. And the distinction there lies in the difference between the content of one's communications versus this sort of just log of transactional data.
What did they seize here?
OSI went into the government office and seized the government computer.
And what did they search?
They performed a search of the hard drive using...
Didn't the hard drive include email and other stuff, or... I don't understand the focus on transactional data. When they seized the whole computer, they seized the whole hard drive, and the hard drive had more than just transactional data on it, did it not?
Well, what Agent Meekins, we can presume that there was more than just these internet history files on the hard drive.
Were there thumbnail pictures?
Excuse me, ma'am?
Pictures?
That was part of what was recovered by, reconstructing these internet history files from the computer's hard drive. And what Agent Meekins testified to in terms of what he searched for, he used a software program that produced a deconstructed report that gave these index.dat files, which is basically...
They seized, in theory, let's stipulate their email on the hard drive. They seized the email, did they not?
Well, I guess with email, it's questionable because email can exist. You can view your email either through the server where it never actually resides on the hard drive.
We'd stipulate that they seized whatever was on the hard drive.
Whatever was on the hard drive.
And there was something on the hard drive other than transactional data.
Presumably, yes, Your Honor. But really what the focus is what did the government produce from this search into evidence? And that is the internet history files.
Well, what was seized in the Long case? What was seized in the Long case?
In the Long case, there wasn't a seizure because the captain from the IG's office went to the network administrator, Mr. Assessor, and said, retrieve from the installation's server, the government email server, internet server, the emails of the appellant in that case, Long.
What are the limits to the government's argument? If this person had no reasonable expectation of privacy, is there anything the government could not have done? I mean...
In terms of what they searched on the computer?
Let's say the CO thought this guy was a dirtbag and said, well, I know how I'm going to get rid of him. I'm just going to have his computer searched and see whether he's paid his taxes on time, see whether he's sending flirting email to people. He has no expectation of privacy. So let's just rifle through this thing.
Well,
and as long as I'm in here, why don't I search the file drawers?
Well, I mean, there certainly are limits, but those limits are defined.
I want you to tell me what they are, because if we write an opinion that says what you want it to say, he has no expectation of privacy, we need, apparently, there has to be some limit to that, or perhaps there isn't. What is the limit?
Well, Your Honor, what the government's asking for this court to write in its opinion is that under these facts and circumstances of this case, just as like in the
law... Okay, and then
case,
we get to the next case, which involves an office with a guy with a computer, and the government goes in and says, well, he had no expectation on that computer, so let's go in and look for his tax records. Why couldn't they do that?
Well, it is the government's position that the analysis, to some extent, is going to depend on what evidence is produced from the search, because it is the government's position that email is different. So in your scenario, if the commander's going in to search the computer to find emails, to sift through emails to find whatever bad deeds this person might be doing that they're discussing in their email communications, that's different, and that takes us into the universe of Long, because we're talking about an expectation of privacy and the contents of one's communications. It would be a different scenario if we're talking about documents that he had drafted, that he had saved in a password-protected file.
So is the government, are you stating that the government is prepared to say that there is some zone of privacy on that government computer, notwithstanding the banner?
There could be, given what the particular facts and circumstances are. But what we have before the court in this case is the fact that appellant was a reservist occupying a deployed flight commander's military office. That deployed flight commander had left items in that office that presumably...
No, I understand the factual argument in this case. Does it matter if, same facts as this, in this case, if this was a civilian? Let's say this is Africa Command. where they've decided to substitute SESers for generals in military billets, does it make a difference? Two questions. Does it make a difference into outcome, or does it make a difference as to analysis? Because you can say it changes something, and then but the outcome is the same. You get it?
Yes, Your Honor.
This case could implicate a lot of people, some of them who reside across the river.
The analysis would be somewhat different, because when you're dealing with a military member, it's somebody who's obviously subject to the UCMJ, and that a military member doing certain things on the government computer may be criminal.
Civilian is subject to Title 18, among other things.
But not all of the military offenses. There's not an equivalent civilian offense to all of the potential military offenses that you could be committing.
So in the government's view, a military member has a lower expectation of privacy.
Yes, and this court, this court's predecessor in Nunes, definitely recognized that the nature of military life provides military members with a minimal expectation of privacy in government property. And it is, to some extent, the unique nature of military life.
I wasn't clear on your answer to the question about documents. Was it your view that documents would never have an expectation of privacy, or that documents might involve an expectation of privacy? And the example I would give, following up on the recent discussion, is the question of taxes. One of the major activities of the armed forces with respect to the provision of legal services is assistance with preparation of taxes. If there is an understanding within a unit that an individual can use the government computer to prepare the information necessary for the filing of their personal tax returns on a government computer, without asking you to concede at this point or necessarily agree, but is that a situation that could entail an expectation of privacy that would be subject to protection under the rule in the Fourth Amendment?
It's the government's position that's a scenario where there could be a reasonable expectation of privacy. But again, it's going to depend on the facts and circumstances. And it goes to the nature of, it all goes back to what society is prepared to accept as objectively reasonable. If you're told that you're allowed to use your government computer to draft your tax return, I think society in general would consider the information that you put on your tax return to be information that you don't necessarily wish to make public. And so if the facts and circumstances surrounding it indicated that there's a subjective and objectively reasonable expectation of privacy, it's a possibility. But certainly that's a different case from what we have here, because in that scenario you have somebody doing something that's explicitly authorized. In the case that we have here, appellant is using his government computer in an unauthorized manner, and I think that certainly weighs into the analysis, especially in distinguishing this case from Long, because in Long, the appellant there was using the government email system in an authorized manner. There was nothing illegal about her email communications. In this case, we clearly have evidence that the appellant is using his government computer, obviously in violation of the AFI, which makes it an illegal activity.
Just to be clear, so in Long, using the computer to obstruct justice is an authorized activity? I just wanted to make sure I understood what you're getting out of that statement.
It's the fact that she was sending personal emails on that government email system was authorized. So she was not, this is without looking into the contents of the email, was the actions that she was taking in sending the personal email authorized, and it was.
Counsel, one of the reasons that the CCA relied on was, I lost my train of thought, was that the deployed member whose office the reservist was in was going to be coming back, and he would presumably be using that computer again, and all of this material would be there, and that lessened the objective expectation of privacy. Is there anything in the record, or do we know whether or not that deployed member would have access to this password-protected information? Because here, the technician had to have a deconstruction software program that, as we look at the evidence that was introduced, was quite extensive, and the process that he used to get to that information was very extensive. So, you know, what difference does it make if the deployed member came back and could never see that and never knew it was in his computer?
Well, certainly there's no evidence that the returning flight commander that was deployed at the time was going to have access to appellant's password. The evidence was that a system administrator could access the entire contents of the hard drive. There's no indication that, you know, absent the appellant sharing his password with somebody else, that someone else would be able to access what was under his password. However, I think that where that fits in is with Judge Ryan's question about whether this is government property and whether it's issued for personal use. It's clearly this is a government computer that's not issued for his personal use. He's merely, you know, using this computer while he's performing the duties of this deployed flight commander. And I think that sheds even more light on the fact that this was not an item of government property that was issued for personal use.
And would there be a difference if the systems administrator was looking at the computer for routine maintenance or whatever and ran across this information, or if the law enforcement officials asked the system administrator to go in and retrieve and search for and retrieve this data?
Well, with the first part of your question, that difference only comes into play if there's a finding that there is a reasonable expectation of privacy. Because if there's a finding that there is a reasonable expectation of privacy, then you can look under the Supreme Court's case in O'Connor, you know, was there this workplace exception? With the second part of your question, if the system administrator was going in to get something at the behest of law enforcement, we have a case like Long then. So I don't think that there's necessarily.
And where's the distinction then between this case and that situation?
I'm sorry.
What's the distinction then between this case and the situation in Long, where this computer was seized, it was given by law enforcement, the system administrator went in because they were asked to do that after the computer was seized by law enforcement to make the search?
Well, again, the distinction goes to what it is that you have a reasonable expectation of privacy in. And Long is a case about email, and email is different because society recognizes the personal nature of email, so that there are circumstances where it is objectively reasonable to have that expectation of privacy and the contents of your email communications when you send them in an authorized manner.
But I think you've agreed in earlier questions that it doesn't end with email. There can be other documents or images on a computer that an individual would have a reasonable expectation of privacy in.
And you're correct. The government's not arguing a bright-line rule that email is it. But when asked to distinguish between the facts of this case and the facts of Long, that's the biggest distinguishing factor, is that you have email on one end of the spectrum. You might have other things in the middle, like tax returns or documents that are prepared and saved under password-protected files. But we're on another end of the spectrum here when we're talking about merely an automatically recorded transactional log of the websites that were accessed, that are merely the internet history.
Where in the record does it reflect that the only thing the government searched was the transactional log having seized the entire hard drive?
Well, that comes from the testimony of Agent Meekins. In his testimony, he provides that he used.
And does the Fourth Amendment protect you from merely from unreasonable searches or also unreasonable seizures?
The Fourth Amendment protects you from unreasonable searches and seizures. But if we're going to look at it in the context of was this an unreasonable seizure, then the question is, did he have a reasonable expectation of privacy in the government computer period.
Right, but I'm getting after the fact that you're focusing entirely on the transactional records. But if you come and seize my house and then say, but we're only looking for the shoes, from my standpoint, I'm thinking you've seized my house.
Exactly, and your house is clearly, that goes to the heart of the Fourth Amendment.
You seized the entire computer. From the computeree's standpoint,
exactly.
You're not saying, they're only going to look at the transactional data, never mind all my personal letters on there.
But appellant did not have a reasonable expectation of privacy in that government computer.
Okay, but that's what you should be arguing, isn't it, rather than just the transactional data?
Well, because of the nature of the computer, it's almost kind of a backwards analysis, because it's a layered analysis, and normally it would be from sort of the outside in. But here, it's appellant does not have a reasonable expectation of privacy in the government computer itself. However, if, for example, there are things such as emails that reside, under his password-protected profile on that government computer, he may have a reasonable expectation of privacy in the contents of those communications. So the government's argument is he does not have a reasonable expectation of privacy in the government computer.
I see. So you're in and out. No expectation of privacy on the hard drive, potentially expectation of privacy in particular aspects of the hard drive, but not with respect to the transactional data.
Yes, Your Honor.
How do you answer the contention that the expectation of privacy goes not to particular items or files, but exists as against law enforcement, as opposed to routine maintenance and that kind of thing?
Well, Your Honor, I think we only get to that analysis if there's first a determination that there is a reasonable expectation of privacy, and then...
Well, you've conceded that there's a reasonable expectation of privacy in something, in co-aid, unless you're strictly limiting it to emails. You've conceded that there's a reasonable expectation of privacy in something on this machine.
I'm sorry, I don't believe that I misspoke if I conceded that.
Okay, the argument is made that, the banner pops up and says this can be monitored and all that, and you're using the machine subject to those conditions. The argument is made that really only applies to monitoring and constitutes consent to monitoring for non-law enforcement purposes, and that rummaging around the computer for evidence, which is what's at issue here, is another matter. Now, how do you answer that contention?
The monitoring aspect in Long was looked at in terms of monitoring for the specific activities that were listed in the log-on banner versus monitoring the system or going into the system to retrieve information for law enforcement purposes. This court long looked to that because this court determined that the language of that banner in Long actually worked to reaffirm the expectation of privacy because it described only limited circumstances in which monitoring would take place.
And there's nothing in this record that indicates this banner said anything different.
There's not, and it was appellant's burden to show a subjective and objectively reasonable expectation of privacy.
Well, so we have Long out here, and Long says that create, there's some sort of expectation out here, and the argument is that as against law enforcement for a search for evidence, which is what we have here, you've got an expectation of privacy. Now, how do you answer that?
Well, in that situation, a large part of that analysis depended on the limited monitoring that was described in the banner. The evidence that we have in this case is simply consent to monitoring, and certainly the appellant.
Oh, you're saying that this banner said something different?
That's the evidence that we have in this case is that the banner said for official use, it's a DoD computer, not to be used for illegal activity, consent to monitoring. That's the evidence in this record. And certainly, if the banner had other language that limited the monitoring to certain situations, appellant had the opportunity during the suppression hearing.
Well, I'm not sure evidence. The banner in Long had language that limited it to certain situations. It talked about monitoring.
It talked about monitoring in certain situations.
It didn't contain exculpatory language, to my recollection.
The banner in Long was very detailed, and this court looked to the specific language set out in terms of the monitoring, because the banner listed what it would be monitored for. Mm-hmm. In this case, the only evidence we have is that it's consent to monitoring, period. We don't have other language that limits the situation.
Okay, so is it your contention then that use of this computer constituted a general consent to monitoring and search?
Based on the evidence before the
court. For law enforcement purposes?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, why wouldn't that include emails?
I guess it depends. I mean, it certainly would be a different situation from Long, where we don't have the more...
So this is distinguishable from Long because here you have some sort of a generalized consent that you didn't have in Long. Is that what you're arguing?
That's one aspect of the argument.
It sounds like you're arguing that under this installation, the OSI could go to the network administrator and sit there and look at the computers of everybody on the installation to see if any of them are engaged in criminal activities. You can do that through the network administrator. You can get into the computer and read every word and every document there. Is that your view that what this record stands for when it used the word monitoring?
The government's view is limited to the facts and circumstances of this case, but with a general consent to monitoring without any more limitation on what kind of monitoring and how it would occur is a more generalized consent, that in the government's position that would be distinguishable from Long, and it would be a wider door that would be opened in terms of what could be monitored.
I'm not really sure why you're even focusing on the banner. I mean, it's not the government's position that this was a consent search, is it? I thought that the government's position was that this was a government computer and that consent is absolutely irrelevant, and that it was a different situation in Long where there was an issue with respect to testimony by the network administrator about the privacy interest that it recognized despite the banner.
That's correct, Your Honor. The government's not arguing that this was a consent search. The banner is merely part of the facts and circumstances that are looked to in determining whether there was a subjective and objectively reasonable expectation of privacy.
And you'd agree this wasn't a monitoring situation. The network administrator had nothing to do with what was to the search and to the seizure of the computer, right?
Absolutely. It was not a monitoring situation.
Well, if it's not a monitoring situation, then the banner is really not relevant to our consideration.
Well, the banner is relevant to the subjective expectation, whether appellant had a subjective expectation of privacy.
Well, but let's get back to you just stated that it was not a monitoring situation. And yes. The banner was there to put people on notice that the computer would be monitored. So if this is not a monitoring situation, can't we just set that aside and look at the other issues that are the other matters that have been brought up?
Certainly the consent to monitoring part of the banner is not essential to the government's argument. It's merely just part of the facts and circumstances that tend to show a lack of expectation of privacy. It's merely the argument that when one's using the computer, acknowledging the logon banner that says that use constitutes consent to monitoring, that in and of itself, even though this was not discovered through monitoring, that's a fact and circumstance that can limit someone's expectation of privacy.
So the fact that monitoring was permissible justifies this seizure, even though it did not involve monitoring.
The monitoring does not, in and by itself, justify the seizure. It's the totality of the facts and circumstances of the case, and that's merely one of the facts and circumstances.
What about the statement in the record that the agent on hand thought to contact the military magistrate to gain search authority?
Your Honor, it's the government's position that there really isn't anything that can be read into that statement. The military judge in the suppression motion made findings of fact that search authorization was not obtained. There's no other evidence to shed light onto what the agent was starting to comment on in that part of his testimony. So it's the government's position that you really can't read anything into that. I see that actually my time is up.
If you'd like to briefly conclude, please do so.
Thank you. In conclusion, appellant did not have a reasonable expectation of privacy in the internet history files of his government computer. Even if this court were to find error with that search, that error would be harmless beyond a reasonable doubt with respect to the specifications of charge 1 and charge 3. And just briefly, the internet chat logs, the chat logs that were produced independent of the search of the government computer, speak for themselves in black and white, and that's what the court members took back with them into their deliberation room. And that is irrefutable evidence of appellant's intent and his predisposition and the absolute lack of government inducement in this case. And as far as the second issue, appellant was not denied effective assistance of counsel. His trial defense counsel's concessions were part of a
counsel. I would not, unless my colleagues would like to do so, invite you to offer an argument on issue two, but you can stand on your brief at this point.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The military is different, but the expectation of privacy within the Fourth Amendment still do apply in certain circumstances. When government counsel cites Muniz, that this court specifically said that the expectation of privacy vis-a-vis the commander was more limited and didn't reference law enforcement. So in that situation, we're specifically talking about what the commander was doing. And if we look at the facts surrounding Muniz, what the commander was doing was essentially his command duty to try and locate the appellant in that case. He was not trying to secure evidence in a criminal investigation. Now, when talking about the monitor, it was my understanding of the argument was the monitoring was that there was a general consent that went to the facts and circumstances for the expectation of privacy. But the argument sounded more in terms of is that a person really can't have an expectation of privacy in anything in the government computer they use by virtue of the fact that it could be monitored. That may be true with respect to the network administrator. It may be true with respect to the supervisor or the commander. But again, what we're talking about is law enforcement. And when law enforcement does an illegal search, it doesn't matter if the network administrator or supervisor could have done a lawful search. The focus is always going to be on the legality of the search, not necessarily the conduct that might be illegal of the subject. So for these reasons, we do request that this court find that there was error and that that error was not harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. We should set aside all fines, but at a bare minimum, set aside the fines with respect to charge 2. No further questions.
Thank you, counsel. And we thank counsel for both parties for your submission today. The case is now submitted, and the court will stand in recess until 10 a.m.
Court stands in recess until 10 a.m.